Today, I'm joined by one of life's true culinary legends. Born of humble beginnings near Burgundy in eastern France, our guest has over half a century of culinary experience. Some of the greatest chefs in the industry learnt their trade under him, including the likes of Marco Pierre White, Michael Caines, Bruno Loubet, and Heston Blumenthal. He's become a British institution with his evergreen presence on our TV screens and that magical morsel of Oxfordshire called Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons. Welcome to the fabulous Raymond Blanc, OBE.
Enchanté, Sheila. Thank you very much for that very, very warm welcome.
Raymond, I'm incredibly grateful to have you on. I know you've just recovered from your second bout of COVID. How are you feeling? You look great. How are you feeling?
I'm great. Well, just as you, okay. And just tells you, the vaccine has got a huge role to play, and it does play that role. Okay, you may get COVID, but it's a very light COVID. It was just like a simple little cold, not a flu. So the symptoms were very, very little. And in 10 days, I was up on my feet and doing what I do best.
Excellent. And the last couple of years have been extremely challenging for you. Your first bout of COVID, you were hospitalized. It was quite severe. And of course, as well, you sadly lost Maman Blanc, who I know had been your biggest inspiration in your life. Can you just talk to us briefly about getting through this period, this last couple of years?
And it was the first COVID was really nasty because it was high fever and I felt cold, ice cold. Okay, then I was taken through ambulance because of the high fever, 40, 41 degree, to thank God to the John Radcliffe in Oxford, which is one of the very best hospitals, and it's close to home as well. So being close to home helps. And it was really a nasty. I had 70% of my lungs infected by COVID. I had pneumonia. I could barely breathe. It was really hard. And when you are in a hospital, you hear all the shouts of distress or pain. You know, it's a very tough environment. And I must say, I owe really my life to this extraordinary staff. I was once a nurse, okay, a long time ago, for a year and a half, because I thought I had that empathy for people and I felt I could do something, but it was too hard. So I appreciate even more so the extraordinary generosity, that selflessness of these nurses, these doctors, who sometimes don't see their partners for 3 months, 6 months, a whole year, hardly see their kids. They will work shift at night at the last moment. So I was amazed because by them, by what they do. And I know because I work in a medium of excellence here, but the excellence is about creating a wonderful environment, okay, creating that generosity, that kindness to give total strangers the best moment of their life. So and to create, of course, the very best food, okay, you can possibly give, to create something magical for them. But an hospital, they save life. Okay, and I was amazed, completely subjugated by the extraordinariness of these amazing people, and I love them. And I did a beautiful party, okay, because you know very well, for example, when you are on oxygen, if during the night you move and the oxygen tube goes, you die, simple as that. So you are completely dependent, okay, on the professionalism, okay, the care, okay, of your nurses. And I must say, I love them so completely. And I created a huge party, okay, eventually this summer, and it was with so much joy and so much.
Oh, lovely.
I owe them so much, and I think the whole country owes them so much. They were amazing. And actually in this hospital, when I was really, really ill and they didn't know what would happen next, that's where I really saved my own life, with the help, of course, of these doctors, because where I learned to, I've learned to meditate in this bed with a mask, you know, the oxygen and so on your tummy, lying down, barely able to breathe. And that's where I've learned to meditate.
Something you've really been trying to do for years, isn't it?
Years. Yeah. Because I would think of a dish, I would think of a new garden, a new dining room, a new beautiful new bedroom. Okay, and then suddenly on that bed, that's where I've learned to really completely forget about the unimportant and focus on breathing. Simple as that. And manage. That's why I'm here today. But I manage, without them, I would have never managed.
Yeah, well, so really, there's always a silver lining.
But I think, you know, out of the worst situation, we can always, you know, learn something good.
Find the silver lining.
Absolutely, there's always somewhere, you know. And now I've restored my work life a bit as well. Not completely, because, you know, when you are so ill, you become very spiritual. You can become, because you feel so lightweight, you feel so poor. So tiny. So you go towards God, you go spiritual, and of course you learn how to meditate. But the problem, as soon as you go out, life comes back into you. You go back more or less in the same, and that's disappointing, is it?
So are you still meditating, or do you still find the time to do that?
I find it harder and harder, but definitely what I do now, I do stretches every day and a bit of yoga every day, minimum half an hour. And my breathing it's like breathing champagne, you know. I can feel them coming in. So I learn how to breathe better, which helps stress, which helps anxiety, because it was a long COVID, so it was not pleasant. But you could be in the middle of Oxford or London and you forget suddenly. There will be a curtain falling in and you don't know where you are. You sit and you cannot connect with your phone. It doesn't make any sense. So you sit and wait until it gets better. And you have huge panic attack. It took a whole year to get better. And I'm so glad now because thank God I am good. I really feel good. I feel that burning energy. Which is fantastic.
That is so fantastic to hear.
Very lucky man.
Raymond, you've worked incredibly hard for the best part of 67 years. Has the pandemic made you reevaluate the way you live your life now? What are the emotional impacts?
Yes, of course it does to us all, not just me, but to us all. And actually the pandemic has been a catalyst really to almost reinvent our lives, reinvent society, reinvent what kind of environment we want. And it's extraordinary what's happening. People are also cooking a bit more as well. They tender their gardens as well. I think now the post-pandemic will have, number one, I think, on a huge impact on people. Find what is the most important. And we all know the most important is to live well. So is it right to work 16 hours a day without ever seeing your partner or bringing a couple of flowers to your loved one? No, I think young people have realized that. They want that balance is a hub word, that balance work and life. And they're right, why not? Why not? I think we're now much more aware, okay, of the quality of life. Okay, and that work is very much as important. It's very much the work is very much one of the elements of happiness, because work gives you so much satisfaction, so much proud, so much achievements, you know, and to make people happy and with a team and a team that you teach, pass on your knowledge. It's amazing what you get. So I think, sure, the quality of life should include work, okay? And the first thing I would teach young people is to be totally curious, ask questions, you know, be passionate, you know, just connect with a deeper part of yourself to eventually, you know, grow and make, you know, I think finding one's passion in life. I know not everyone does. I'm lucky. So are you, Shalina, okay?
I am very lucky, yes.
So I think it's really exciting to pass on that knowledge to young people, to empower them, and that I love to do. I love to mentor. I love to teach. And I had such a, I'm such a lucky man because I had so many extraordinary students. I trained about 38 Michelin star chefs who are all over the world. So it's amazing. I'm a lucky man.
And your passion.
I don't know what your question was, but here we are.
It's okay. I'm sure we'll be leading into all sorts of different directions, and I'm quite excited for that. So don't worry at all. So I mean, your passion, and you know, it's just so contagious. But I really want to talk to you about, you know, your journey as a child in France, and your family life really and truly revolved around food completely, didn't it?
Yes, because it's a French life. At that particular time, also it has not changed very much since food is really so much part of it. And it's not just about, oh, my little belly, all I earn is for you. That's an important part of it. But food is part of a deeper part of our culture. Food is about growing food in a natural way without chemicals. Food is about the art of, when you've grown the food, preparing the food, cooking it and giving it. Okay? So effectively you learn about the skill of cooking and then the art of giving. And that my mom, I must say, Maman Blanc, I hold her so deeply in my heart because she's a little woman. She was very tiny. She was 1.55 meters. I'm not a big man, and she was about my size. My son's called her Mother Teresa on speed. So you can imagine that energetic little woman right up the age of 97 would be so active, and she spent her time loving people, completely loving people, being kind to people and cooking for them. So her medium was about cooking, and she, if you didn't have three helping, she would start crying. So you had to have a fourth one. Okay, that's the kind of, but she also a little woman who were empathy for others. She, even up to 95 years of age, she kept a young person totally disabled called Sylvain. Okay, at 95, this young man, okay, very tiny young man died, okay, and that really broke her heart. But that's, and she looked after him for 6 hours a day, every day, Saturday and Sunday, all of her life, most of her life. Yeah. So that's the kind of woman she is. She's she's made of generosity, of kindness, of thoughtfulness, and selflessness. Amazing. And I still love her to bits. Actually, I did a statue of her, which is a lovely story, by the way. And the story is a friend of mine called Loy Leblanc, who was a great sculptor. Okay, he had his wife, Judith, and Judith departed, left him, died, okay, about 10 years ago. And Lloyd couldn't anymore sculpt. He couldn't. He just didn't. So for 2 years, he remained without making any work. And that saddened me. So I took Lloyd with me at my home in France, and we stayed 3 days with my mom. And something happened, okay? And I told him, look, take photo of her, touch her, just love her. I know you can sculpt. And after 3 days and wonderful meals and lots of good wine, okay, he said, Raymond, yes, I think I feel I can. And the first statue that he did again as a sculptor was my mom. So she's standing in a mannequin, okay, and full size.
I've seen it. It's a beautiful statue.
Okay, so that's the kind of woman who has so much impact on others.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm lucky to have maybe a little bit of influence, a lot of influence, and that's the values that we are to bring in this place about generosity, kindness, sharing, making, living that moment, making it special, you know, and create, you know, an excellence which has got real values about extraordinary authenticity, created by young people who love what they're doing. And you feel the energy of the food, you feel the energy of the design, you know, and you're completely involved, of course, in choosing which picture, the quality of the beam of light on that picture, you know, which sculpture, etc. So you're completely involved in making that environment good, where you feel good. It's not about a show, it's not a nose, a French nose bag. It's a place where you feel happy. And you'll be amazed know, and I'm sure you have that those situation when you feel that the gift of giving is real, you feel in heaven. Simple as that. There's no other place. In a food heaven, in a garden heaven, in a people's heaven. That's what we have at Lemanoir. And that is through that little woman, because that vision, which I own, has been passed on to everyone. Everyone owns it. Yeah. It wouldn't be good, is it, if I was keeping it for myself? I wouldn't
Well, you wouldn't be where you are today if you were doing that. But you have, I mean, it's an incredible gift to be sharing as much as you have. And we will go through all the different things that you have been doing throughout your life in a little bit. But before we move on, I just wanted to say, I'm so sorry that I know you lost Maman Blanc only recently to COVID as well. So I'm so sorry
for the loss. Especially now, the way she died is typical of her, the way she died. She didn't want to live in that beautiful big house that my papa built with his own hand because it was too big for her, okay? And also my sister came along often, it was too big a house. So she decided to go in a home and she decided to go in a home which was run by sisters. She's very Catholic. She's a guilty Catholic, actually. My father was a communist atheist, and my mom was a guilty Catholic. So imagine, but at 97, she decided, Raymond, I want to go finish my life in this little convent where there was only 30 beds. Okay, and run by sisters, and she was just by the chapel, so she was close to God. She was perfect. And at night, on the first day, she had to take a test of COVID. So she was in a hospital taking that test, and she had to stay the night. And what happened? She didn't want to disturb the nurses, so she decided to go off from her bed, lifting the guard, and the bed was very high, and she crashed. Okay, onto the soul, simply because she didn't want to disturb the nurses.
Oh, I'm so
sorry. And that's her. That is just a beginning, her end are just like that kind of beautiful little woman. Yes, I adore her. That's it. That's enough. You're going to get me there. Okay.
No, we won't. But it's clear your mom was the biggest inspiration in your life. What was it that actually brought you to the UK? What was the pivotal moment that happened?
Well, as I said, I became I was a young man, and like most young men, I didn't know what I wanted to do in my life, and I was in a college called l'école d'horlogerie de Besançon, which grew engineers, architects, and I hated, but you didn't choose where you would go, so the teachers did. So I was in this college and I hated mathematics. I hated square, rectangles, hexagonal, triangles, any form which had a form which was defined by a strong geometry. I hated it. And I loved, which was asymmetric. Anything asymmetric, fluent, I loved it. Okay, so I was not destined to be an architect. Okay, so I stopped. Okay, and I looked for my little. And that's why I tell young people: find your passion, please, my young man, young lady. Please find it. It's worth it, because it will give you so many wonderful things in your life. And so I started, and I decided to be a nurse, okay, for a year and a half at the Hospital Sainte-Anne in Besançon, where I was in leukemia. So I saw at least 12 young people dying. It was hard to see that. And eventually, it was too much. I couldn't deal with it. And equally, the nurses found me a number of times with the matron, the Catholic matron, found me a few times in the cupboards, okay, with a young nurse, okay. So definitely I was not I was not proper material. And equally, but mostly I found it too hard to see these young kids who would have a hair growing, thinking they were reprieved. And again, that is why I admire so much these nurses and these doctors who have done so much, okay, to so many people. Okay, so I decided. So then after I worked in a factory, and that was disastrous, because I realized, you know, a human being can be crushed to be nobody. Mm-hmm. You are coming in, you click in, you your time. Okay, nobody knows you, nobody connects with you, and you do a job like that for 8 hours, and you die a little. Okay, and it was the most dehumanizing things that I've ever done in my life. You are nobody, you're nobody, you do nothing. Okay, you're part of that huge machine. And that's why maybe 35 hours a week when you do this kind of job is plenty, because it's frightening. Yeah. So then after I got scared, so I decided you've got to find, and I should know, because my mom was cooking like an angel. Food was all over the place. Every Sunday we'd have 25 people around the table, with all the neighbors, the cousins, the uncles. And yet, stupid me, I was still looking for what I was doing, until I saw this beautiful restaurant at night called Le Palais de la Bière. And my God, that was a total revelation. And suddenly it sunk. When I saw these young waiters, you know, with their Bordeaux jacket, their silver epaulettes, running with their dishes, the maître d'hôtel in their black tie, carving and flambeing. It was at night. It was a beautiful summer night with bristling leaves, and it was so beautiful. And I saw this ballet of these waiters and maître d'hôtel, and this gorgeous food being flambeed, carved, and the crepes Suzette being, oh my God, I fell completely in love. And I knew that's it. I want to be the chef who creates this food. But it didn't happen that way, because life never happens the way we want to. We always constantly surprised. There was a curved ball who comes in. So I made the job, the boss, okay, with a gray suit, gray hair, gray jaw, gray everything, farting man. And I told you, I'm going to be the greatest chefs on earth. I went on for about 1 hour, okay, until saying, okay, man, good, I give you a job. You'll be the cleaner. I said, thank you, sir, so much. And I became a cleaner, not just a cleaner, the best cleaner. Very best. Oh my God, the best, world best. And I would go on see the 6 meter tall, it was a beautiful 18th century brasserie with my pepper and my vinegar. And I would shine these mirrors. I would go up to my ladder and shine those mirrors until there was not a single smear. The toilets were amazing. The floors were like Versailles, everything was shiny. So I was promoted to washing up. And then I lost my hands because the chemicals were so strong. So I went on to glass washing up, and I became the best glass washer up, you know, and the glasses were so beautiful, all hand blown. And that was the time when the French would drink at least three types of wines a day. And I love my glasses, and I polish them, I love them. I even bought my own linen, you know, cloth to leave no fluff whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
They created a technique to clean them up until they were beautiful. But each glass that were coming in, I would taste it. Not to get drunk. Just 6 months, I knew all my Sangiovese from a Cabernet Sauvignon, from my Pinot Noir, my Gamay, from a Cabernet Franc. I knew it all. And of course, I would cook every night until 5 o'clock in the morning for my friends. I would read all the great classics, you know, food science, food nutrition, food love, food, everything, you know. And I've got many of these books just behind me, which is still the books I used to read as a young man, okay, wanting to be a chef, because I wanted to understand, you know, the connection with history, with our soul, with our culture, with our food, etc. And then I cut down the breakage by half as well of those glasses. So the boss loved me, the sommelier loved me, and then I became appointed as waiter. Oh, I was so proud, my God, running that restaurant, you know. And I was carving, learning the recipes. I was always the longest, but my dishes were always the best. My guests were looking at me saying, oh, c'est délicieux. Okay, but then there was a problem. The problem started here. That's why England was looming. As a young waiter, first I understood that excellence is a teamwork. Having been a cleaner, a washer-up, okay, a waiter, Okay, I understood that excellence is formed by an ensemble of people who are individually connected with beauty, excellence, and the best. Okay, and that then when you have that team of individuals, then you can create something truly beautiful. So then the chef, I was close to the kitchen, I was seeing the chef. The chef was a tall man, very nasty, with a mustache which would bristle. You know, it was about 1.90 meters. That means 3 times my size, about. Okay, I'm pocket size myself. You know, and I would tell him, chef, what about putting a bit of a little bit of sabayon to lighten the sauce, or a bit less cream here? Can we replace the cream by a tiny bit of milk or yogurt, a bit of lemon juice, a bit of paprika? He would look at me, you know, and I thought I wanted to converse. And then one moment I got close to him and to tell him, chef, what about, and I never had time to finish my sentence. He took a copper pan and just full force put it in my face. And it broke my jaw, it broke my nose, my teeth. Okay. And I was about 3 weeks in the hospital. Okay. And that's where I lost my job. I lost my teeth. I lost my jaw. Okay, and the boss came to see me and he held that monologue because you cannot say that to the chef is a genius. He put a roof over my head, he gives education to my children. You tell him you cannot cook. Obviously, when you have wires everywhere, you cannot respond. Okay, and he went on to say, okay, young man, but I've seen you working, and I know you're going to succeed, but not in France. I'm going to help you to get a place in England. So then, having lost my job, two of my teeth, okay, I was then exiled to Great Britain. So I never arrived in Great Britain like Napoleon would have loved to come, you know. What horse, okay, all conquering. I came very humbly in Great Britain, a little suitcase, but Sea Chef never managed to kill the will to touch excellence, if not for a few seconds. That's how I came in England. It was frightening. England was frightening, apart the rock and roll. Okay, rock and roll, oh my God.
And how was your English when you came? Did you speak in English?
Because, I was speaking German almost currently, because the French government thought, because that German would rule über alles, okay? But they didn't. England became the... So effectively, I was learning English, German. German was my second language, okay? And very poor. My God, I was bad. Oh, God. Nobody could understand a word. I remember when I arrived in England, I took my little car, all broken and so on. It looked like a Gordini, but it wasn't. You know, it was a blue stripes, mighty blue, French blue, with 6-8 big lights like that. You don't mess around with me, otherwise you were in serious trouble. And I arrived in England like that. Okay, it was quite incredible. And it was really, and of course, that's when I discovered the local restaurants, okay, like the, how do you call that? Oh my God, with a plastic tomato on the table. Really frightening, it was scary. I remember when I put the car into a ferry, because I wanted to taste firsthand British food. Okay, and I wanted that ferry, okay, and I went to the belly of the ferry to get some food. And there was this huge restaurant, gray and so on, plastic tables and so on, the waiter full of the drippings of the night before. Okay, and then I recognized on the menu fish and chips. So I ordered fish and chips. They came in 2 minutes. I couldn't believe it. I've never seen that in my life. And I could smell it 6 feet away.
Okay.
Because the smell of the vinegar was so strong, I started to cough. Mm-hmm. And then the food arrived on my plate. And the fish was rectangular. And I've never seen a rectangular fish in my life. My fish was always with a head, a tail. But no, not in England. No, 30 years ago. 37 years ago, whatever it is, okay? And the fish was square, and then the chips were gray, and I was coughing on the top of the vinegar. Oh God, this was really a frightening experience. So that was one of my first fish and chips. I tested better since. And it was then I understood that I was about to go in a country which would be very different from my own, okay? And it was tough. But what made it good, okay, it was my will to be a chef. So that means I kept reading, I kept working. I was in front of us, okay, at this epoch. There's lots of wonderful stories we won't have time to go through today, but there was amazing stories. And then the chef fell ill, and the waiter, he fell ill and he was sacked, okay, because the food was so bad. I remember when I would enter the restaurant, you would smell first of coffee. The Cognac coffee were boiled all day long, which would be served to be, God, I can't believe, and that horrible food from the chef. So the boss asked, who can cook? I said, I can cook.
So this is at the Rose Revived.
Rose Revived. So Rose, the inn, a beautiful inn, really a beautiful inn, by the Thames, okay, and the boat with three, there was a new bridge as well by the Thames, by the Rose Revived, which was called New Bridge because it had been rebuilt in 1300. And I discovered the beauty, of England very much. That's where my first employment. Mm-hmm. It took me 5 days to come to Oxford, from London to Oxford, because nobody could understand, I would say Oxford. And nobody could understand where it was, because you should have said Oxford. Okay. No better, but I don't tend to lose myself too much now because my English is a little bit better. You seem to understand me as well. Okay, I cooked in a matter of 6 months. The restaurant was full. Excellent. The guide was present. I did my own garden immediately. And I remember I had a huge problem with the Mr. Lay, the gardener, because he used to grow carrots like that, leeks like that, big like trunk of trees, and he couldn't understand that I wanted them just in their youth, and he didn't know peas, he didn't know moshtu, he didn't know a lot of beautiful herbs, so he didn't know. So he would grow the food, and then during the night, I had to steal it, go to the lamp and steal it, okay? Because I didn't want the big stuff, otherwise it's fibrous, it's big, it's not good, it's a lot of, okay? So, and then one night, through the moon, I could see the huge shadow whilst I was cutting my baby carrots, okay? And suddenly I saw that huge shadow, it was Mr. Lay. Oh my God, I had to run fast, okay? And thank God, little Frenchman run faster than big Englishman.
But you didn't want to end up in hospital again.
He saw that somebody was stealing the vegetables.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just to give my guest again the best, okay? But so it was really my start when I went to Oxford, okay? And then I decided to have my own business.
May I just interrupt you for a second? I just want to rewind, Raymond. So just going back to, the chef that physically attacked you, who put you in hospital, obviously that's ultimately what led you to the UK. And dare I say, there's all the silver lining that we talked about earlier on. Did that chef ever come to know about your success in the UK?
No, the boss, yes, the boss did, yes. And many maîtres d'hôtel and chefs got to know it.
Mm.
Him, I never saw him.
Okay.
Him, I never saw him. And I didn't particularly want to see him because it's exactly what we don't want in our industry. We need to reinvent our industry, and that post-pandemic will help us to do that, to reinvent completely our industry. So we stop the split shifts, we work on the 4 days a week, we give young people the best possible training, to create an industry where you as a mom will want to send, or dad, you want to send your kids to our industry because soon it's going to be the very best in every possible way. And that is, I find that exciting. That's part of the changes which are going to happen. Okay.
Yeah, and you're a big part of that change. You started, so from, So from the Rose Revived, you started your own business, Quatre Saisons, with very little experience or knowledge of even running a restaurant kitchen, let alone running a business. You must have had incredible self-belief, or were you just unafraid of failure?
At this time, I was in love with food, but being in love with food doesn't mean just food. It's creating a beautiful environment around it. It's working with a team of young people who are going to share your values, and only then are you going to train them and train yourself, because it's very daunting as to open a restaurant. Okay, when you never basically had a restaurant of your own. Okay, and I've done 3 or 4 months in that pub. Okay, that beautiful little inn. But basically, I had no idea to run a restaurant. And obviously, I had my wife at the time, okay, who helped me. But basically, the food was all your domain, and the service was all your domain. And it was normal to work 16, 18 hours a day, completely normal. And you had to become, you were everything. Of course, you were a wash up, you were a cleaner, you are. Not the accountant, thank God I didn't have to be the accountant, because I'm very bad at figures, okay? But you had to be, you know, everything, the teacher. At the same time as you were learning, you also teach young people. I've got my wonderful Mark Peregrine, who came 1 year after we opened, so in 78, he's still the director of the Raymond Blanc Cookery School. Imagine. That makes 42 years. It's amazing.
Wow.
And if you see the usefulness of Mark and the approach to food, it's all about, yes, it's all about this kind of, this kind of food, basically. You know, Raymond Blanc School is not about Le Manoir. Raymond Blanc School is all about Maman Blanc, but demystifying food, creating some fantastic food, but about simplicity. Okay, so you don't hate me, and you have you do basically 12 hours fun making a dish. So it's really about Raymond Blanc School is all about the simplicity, that purity of ingredients, all organic, the best. And of course, a lot comes from our garden and from our orchard. Okay. And all the rest comes from around Le Manoir. Okay. So I think, and Mark is the best example, okay, of these young people we have trained, who are now, you know, completely senior people, who teach, who pass on that knowledge to dozens and dozens of young people. It's exciting.
Yes, it is. It's so exciting that all these fantastic opportunities have been created at Le Manoir for such a long time now. But when you first started out yourself, you didn't have these kind of opportunities. You had to do it on your own and learn from your mistakes. But you were incredibly ambitious and resilient. Talk to us about the beginning stages of Au Quatre Saisons.
First, we'll open the Quatre Saisons. In 3 years, it got 2-star Michelin. Okay, in 3 years. But the inside was simple. It was red and white tablecloths. So you know you were in France. Cheap prints of Paris, because I couldn't afford anything else. And I cut my coquerelle, okay, my plastic coquerelle. I painted it, and the feathers, bleu, blanc, rouge. So you knew it was a French restaurant. My kitchen was 4 meters by 4 meters. I had a 1920 ovens without a bottom, okay, and I had a 1950 Kenwood, which I had to stop in order to pass the speed, the new speeds. So my kitchen had no air conditioning. It was not even insulating. That means during the summer, it was 30 degrees, and during the winter, you were freezing. But yet, we managed to get the highest possible standard, and of course, learn. But these values were born, the values that we have at Le Manoir now were born, created in this tiny little place called Les Quatre Saisons, which is all about curiosity, creativity, constantly look at a dish, redo it 10 times, 20 times, 50 times, always look at that same dish you're going to do many times, look at it with fresh eyes. You know, it's like a relationship, it's so easy to lose it, you know? If you start, you know, have jaded eyes, you will lose it. The same as a food, the same as a dish. If you don't look at it as a childlike curiosity and that love and of reinventing it, that dish will die. It will get boring. It will get flat. It will lose its gloss, its vibrancy. So the quatre saisons was for me a passage of growing up, of course. Mm-hmm. But in 81, okay, it was so funny. I remember when I found Le Manoir, I was like all young French chefs, any young chef who works very hard, especially a chef patron. I had only four young people in the kitchen, imagine. Wow. Okay, and they were all British. Sarah, Connie, and two Mark Houghton and Mark Peregrine. Mark Houghton is now a senior chef, okay, at the Birmingham College, okay?
Okay.
And so I still keep in touch with them, because that's what it's all about.
Fabulous.
Okay, how these two-star Michelin were won, really, and with a French pâtissier, Jacques, a grumpy French pâtissier, okay? And then, so all these values were born here, and that's what I was looking for a house, a better house, and this was, of course, very exciting to look for your new home, so to speak. And I remember it was Sunday morning, a knackered Raymond, burns everywhere. You look at the latest burn, you know, it's blue under the eyes as though you're 23 or 24. You just look about 50 because you're absolutely exhausted. You know, and you look in a mirror, you scare yourself. So I came down, shower, six or eight espresso coffees, you know, and then you wake up a little bit, and then you're leafing a book called Country Life, and I saw suddenly this manor house, which somehow did something to me. So immediately I took my car, a battered green Vauxhall, which had about 20 years of age, okay, and I went to Great Milton, and I asked to whom the manor was that appointment. So I asked to whom his manor house belonged to, Lady Cromwell. Great, good start. So I arrive at the door and I fall in love so completely, like you would fall in love with a woman, exactly the same, no less, no more, completely in love, something which you know is irreversible. Okay, you're not talking about divorce here, okay? We're talking about for life, forever, you know? Something like that, you know? And I remember how I loved it, because it was his grand mini drive, so it was small but it was grand. Then all these beautiful trees around, the beautiful Oxford stone, so all the walls which were different times, the gardens at different levels, and these beautiful, you know, the tall Elizabethan chimneys and this gorgeous yellow Oxford stone glowing. And I felt, oh my God, I could cry. Then I stopped being emotional and I go at that big door. I knock at the door, nobody answering. It was 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning. So I knock harder. So eventually there's a lady who comes in, who I thought to be the servant. She, all her hair was in a bit of a mess, you know? And I said, hello, good morning. May I speak to Lady Cromwell? And she said, but I am Lady Cromwell. So the best start, okay? I've done better in my life. So I said, and she told me, but who are you? She said to me, what do you want? I want to buy your house. So she looked at me, you know, completely dazzled, okay? And said, what do you mean buy my house? I said, who are you, young man, okay? I said, my name is Raymond Blanc. And it's like if I said, I don't know, God or somebody you worship. And she flushed of all the colors. And she left me on the door and she ran, okay, literally run, okay, in the pantry, which was just next door. And I could hear all the crockery noise, you know, and so on. And then she eventually appeared with a tray, with a milk bottle, with a tin, half finished, and a tin on the top of it, some mugs were chips, and a tea bag, which was on the side of it, and some kind of biscuits, okay, brought up biscuits, still in the wrapper, okay. And Monsieur Blanc, please join me. So I joined her in the lounge, okay, and said to me, yes, I will sell my house to you. It's crazy, truly crazy, it's happened exactly the time. I will sell my house to you, Monsieur Blanc. And I'll tell you why, there's three reasons. The first, and I don't put them in order, I went to your place, to your beautiful quatre saisons, and I was with my two daughters and my husband. it was a blissful moment in our life. It was a long time we had not met. Okay, and suddenly it was just right. Okay, and the food was wonderful, and your young people were so caring, so etc. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is 2 months after my husband died, and that was actually the last moment. Les Quatre Saisons was the last moment where we met, where as a family together. Okay, and that's another reason. The third reason, and probably that's the most important one, because if you don't buy this house is going to be transformed into flats, divided into flats. And if you divide that house, you murder it. You completely murder it. And by the time she was crying. Okay, so hey, so I was really completely. Well, it's a good start, eh?
Incredible start, and at that point, you probably knew you already had it in the bag. Not only that, but I believe Lady Cromwell really helped you through the whole process of the purchase.
That was the purchase, yes. So then, and she said to me, "No, I'm going to really help you. I'm going to introduce you to everyone in the village." Okay, and we'll go together, and et cetera. Anyway, so morning, I phoned the bank. Okay, the banker, and then I said very enthusiastically, I'm going to buy the manor, Great Milton Manor. So there was this long silence. Oh, so long. So is he still here? And then he said to me, with what? With what you're going to buy? And I thought about it actually, and I said to him, with my name, with who I am, with what I've already achieved, 2-star Michelin in a tiny little place, okay, European chef of the year, etc. So with my name, and I'm worth 51% of anything. So there was another silence. There was this other long silence when I thought he'd gone and said, oh, we could make it work. But something amazing happened. A lady which is not very well known, who is not very well known for her deeds, decided to create the business expansion scheme, which was Margaret Thatcher. That means you, as an investor, England was in a terrible state at the time. The tax were high. There was no jobs, no creation of jobs. So Margaret Thatcher, who is more or less of a Scrooge, wanted to, was not known as the nicest person, but definitely a great prime minister, okay, which helps his country a great deal. And again here, she decided to create this business expansion scheme. That means you as an investor, if you pay 60 or 70% of tax, you can invest tax-free to create a momentum, new businesses. So she helped me enormously, this lady. I want to hug her now. Okay, okay, do you hear me? Good. She did something really fantastic. And then, of course, the first thing I did to see all my guests, I knew them all. I knew their dogs, their daughters, their sister, their family, And they were all, suddenly I told them about it, and they all invested in this, in the creation, of this business. That's how it happened. And that was the beginning of a great adventure. So Lady Cromwell did keep her word, and she took me with Henri. Henri was a horse. So she took a horse, and a carriage, and together we went to see every single household, and we knocked at the door, and she said to them, "Introduce Monsieur Raymond, who's going to own the manoir aux Quatre Saisons. I hope you're going to support him in his planning permission, because of course it was a private house, so that was not meant to be a business."
Yeah.
But she had so much strength and force. She knew everyone, and they all feared her.
Amazing.
And she helped me, and with Henri, the horse and the guys, we stop at every house, knock at the door, and everyone helped us at Great Milton to change his old house. When she showed me the manoir, I was a bit scared, because at first his old manor house had not been invested into it for a long time. And because aristocracy, rural aristocracy, didn't have the money. Suddenly you had to pay people, gardeners, chefs, and there was no money there, Okay, and this old house was crumbling. Okay, anyway, the garden frightened me, and I love gardens. I got really frightened. When I saw that garden, I saw a jungle with rabbits everywhere, grand elder everywhere, up to here, 1 meter or more of this thick, you know, entanglement.
Wow.
Of, you know, of grass and so on and whatever spiky stuff, you know, and rabbits everywhere, happily just jumping. I say, oh my God. Okay, but the beauty, it's underneath. I didn't need a picture. I knew what was underneath. And what I saw, I knew I was completely reinforced in that falling in love business, because that beautiful manor house had such an energy that I knew I could draw that energy out of it and make it even better and more beautiful, more touching, because it's all about emotion, is it? So, but this was huge work. It was mega work. We had to do the foundation, the roof. We had to gut it out completely, remove the wet rot, the dry rot, change it from a house into a hotel, redoing completely the plumbery, redoing all the electricity system. No, oh my God. And of course, it was tough years. It was really tough years. And in between, you had recessions, one recession after the other, where suddenly interest rate went back to 19%. It was a nightmare. It was hard. And of course, it would work, but the love of this house was growing. The beauty of the house was growing. Everything was, you know, was just it's a fairy tale, and I still enjoy this art the same way.
Yeah, and it still is like a fairy tale. And you almost recreated your French roots in the UK with, you know, you growing your own vegetables and being completely self-sufficient. Was that always the intention?
Oh no, I did that totally naturally. It was natural. My papa, my mom as well were great gardeners. My mother was a farmer. If you see, she was a small woman, but if you saw her hands, I loved her hands because they were full of cuts. They were rough, and I loved her hands because they were the hand of a working woman from 14 years of age, because she was not allowed to go to school. You know, she had to work on the farm, and she worked all her life in the farm. Then she had 5 children, so she worked for her children and her husband. Okay, so so effectively, I knew from the age of 7, 8, I knew all about varieties, about the soil, the science of the soil. I knew all about which variety to grow. No, for example, if my mom sent me to the garden to get some potatoes, she would never say potatoes. Raymond, get me some Maris Piper, and I knew it was French fries. Get me some grenaille, and I knew it was rissole potatoes. Get me some binge, and I knew it was puree. You know, every variety, whether it is carrot, lettuce, had a very specific culinary use. And then I learned the act of giving, you know, of all the bottling, you know, all the techniques. I learned that with my mom, simplement. But and then the love of giving. The table is the strongest, powerful medium where people meet, enjoy, celebrate, laugh, play footsies on the table, something happen. It's a natural place to relax, to share, and to celebrate life. Yeah. Oh yes. And how much did we miss it? Okay, during the pandemic, how much we had to do all our entertaining at home. Okay, we missed our friends, we missed our loved one, we missed our friends. So it was so lovely to be able to go out.